You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Hey, everybody, this is Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man. And if you want to get your money's worth, stay right here because you're listening to Knockouts and Three Counts. And remember, everybody's got a price. Million Dollar Man.
This is Don West here, and I'm telling you, Knockouts and Three Counts is the podcast, baby. Make sure that's the one you check out, because, buddy, like me, they're the real deal, baby.
This is Jake the Snake Roberts. Just let me know. You need to listen to Knockouts and Three Counts, or you'll see that damn snake again.
This is the Ring of Honor World Television Champion, a.k.a. Shane T, boy, the baddest champion you've ever seen, boy. And you're listening to Knockouts and Three Counts.
What up, though, everybody? This is Kyle, and you are listening to Knockouts and Three Counts. And before we get to our very special guest, Dev, why don't you go ahead and throw your social media out so we can cut all the bullshit.
You can find me on Twitter at Devin63, that's DevinThe63. You can find me on Instagram at AllSteakNoSizzle. One word. Make sure you join the Reality Era News group on Facebook, where we're probably going to be talking about the tragic loss of Shad Gaspar, man. Rest in peace to Shad, and thoughts and prayers to him and his family.
Yeah, that's such a shame, man. And shout out to his family, man. And if you guys don't know, you know, he was out swimming with his son out in the ocean out there in California. And a riptide came and washed him up. He saved his kid, and he didn't make it. They called off the search. So, yeah, shout out to his family. And without any further ado, you can find me at Detroit Knockout, Detroit, N-O-K-O-U-T. Make sure you're following the show at KO3CPod on Twitter and Instagram, Knockouts and Three Counts Podcast on Facebook, and Knockouts and Three Counts on YouTube. Follow all them bitches. And without any further ado, he's already got the hat on to already let you know, but we've got one of the newest signees to Mayweather Promotions, part of the Money Team, Mr. Ken Bank on the Robles. How you doing, brother man?
I'm doing awesome. Pretty well. Yourself?
Hey, man. Shit, I'm in Michigan where our weather can't really make up its mind, but since you're in New York, you already know what it is.
Oh, yeah, I know. You're in, but you got to wear shorts and boots.
you ain't lying, though, for real. Well,
I have no idea what you guys are talking about. It's 95 yeah. and sunny down here in Dallas, Texas,
man. Yeah, he dipped and went to Texas like a bitch, but
95 and sunny, baby.
Well, Ken, throw out your social media real quick and let everybody know where they can find you.
Social media is all on all platforms pretty much the same. It's Ken Bank on the Robles, or on Facebook it's just Ken Robles. Everything's pretty much the same. Even on Twitter it's Ken Bank on the Robles, and they can follow my story and everything in boxing on through that name.
So let's get right to that. So we already touched a little bit. We'll get to you getting with Mayweather Promotions, but tell me, how do you find your way to boxing in the first place, man?
Well, it started when I was 15, actually. I was a chubby kid. I love food. Food was always, still to this day. Like, wild
to this day.
Still to this day. You would think I got to put a lock on my fridge because I love to eat. But I played football, and I was always eating. I kept the weight on, and I decided to take on boxing. My dad, it was a professional boxer. He was a Golden Glove champion back in the 80s. So I decided to do it. I said, why not? Why not go for it, see if I'm any good at it, if I can take a punch, give a punch. So he decided to take me to the gym. And I trained for about a couple days. And he goes, all right, let's put you in a sparring session. I sparred. I got beat down.
And that's usually how the first sparring session goes.
Yeah, I got beat down. I'm not going to lie. I got beat down, and that's where he wanted to see. Cause that's where you kind of want to see if they can take a punch, are they going to come back the next day? Because, you know, most of the people say, oh, no, this is not for me. But I came the next day. I kept training. And it was more of a form of to lose weight. But then I started to like it. I started to like the conditioning. It kept me motivated seeing the differences in my body, how I kept trimming down. Fighting at, you know, I fought at as high as 169, I think my heaviest in the amateurs. And then after that, I got beat down, and then I dropped down to 130s, 140s, where I started to see victory.
Well, let me ask this real quick. Let's go back to you playing football first. What position did you play?
I played wide receiver.
And that's part of the reason why I wanted to ask is because I know a lot of athletes that play football and other sports are incorporating boxing and MMA and martial arts training into, you know, their training regimen for whatever sport they're playing. So was you know, boxing at all a part of you want to get better as a wide receiver? If not, how do you see, you know, boxing could help you out as a wide receiver or just playing football, period?
I think, honestly, if you look at professional athletes in general, in a general aspect, you look at basketball players, like you said, football players, they all take boxing as a form of conditioning. Because boxing, the condition, hitting a heavy bag for 6, 7, 8 rounds, and what it does to your body is that it conditions you to a way that the recovery is quicker. So, like, I would say, you know, for example, as a wide receiver, you're sprinting out, you know, plays dead. As boxing, you're going through straight 3-4 minutes. You're going straight. You get a 30-second break. You know, you kind of adapt to it where, okay, off season, a lot of pro athletes, they take boxing so it could incorporate it and use it on the field. Their recovery time, you know, boxers go 12 rounds, 8 rounds. So it actually helps out.
Okay.
So it's funny that you say you started at 15 because I don't know if AB filled you in, but I started at like 13 myself.
Okay.
So I feel you. My story was real similar, except mine wasn't to lose weight. Mine was I grew up with cerebral palsy, so I couldn't cut with scissors, couldn't tie my shoes, couldn't write my name, couldn't do, you know, a lot of that stuff. And I got my ass whooped a bunch, and my mom took me down to a gym down in Detroit where I was the only white kid. So it was like, well, you're either going to learn how to fight or you're going to keep getting your ass whooped.
Exactly.
And that was pretty much what it was. And what was funny is like, and this leads me to my next question. Like, for me, I didn't know I hit hard until the first boxing match I ever had, because dude was kicking my ass so horrible. And I finally made a miss. And you know, when you hit somebody, you could feel the knuckles hit them through the glove. I was like, oh shit. And he went to the other side of the ring. I was like, oh shit. And didn't jump on him, you know? So it was wild. So for you, man, like, when was it when you decided, you know, you wanted to take boxing from, you know, maybe a hobby or something just to lose weight to where you decided, okay, you know, I want to, you know, test my skills in this, you know, and go head to head?
I think it was from when I started at 15, as any probably teenager, you know, you decide, okay, I want to take a break. I want to go have fun. You know, sometimes the discipline is not there at that age for most kids. Right. You know, I've seen talented kids who take a year or 2 years off because their discipline is not there. They still want to enjoy life, but they come back. So I feel for me, it was about maybe 19 where I decided, okay, I want to give this a shot. You know, my body was fully developed. My strength was there. I was cutting the weight down. And I fought in London as an amateur. I traveled around as an amateur and I kept winning. I was like, I'm winning. Like, I'm actually doing it. And then I think when I actually fought in London and then I fought in the Golden Gloves, yeah, I went to, you know, the first, second, third, fourth fight into the finals of the Golden Gloves. It's like, wow, this is actually happening. You know, to see, okay, I'm in the Barclays Center. It's like you're living your dream, but it seems surreal.
I mean, I could only imagine because Barclays Center, man, for you. So are you originally from New York too?
Yes, born and raised. Yes, I'm from Staten Island.
Okay, so you being from New York, man, getting into an arena like Barclays, man, that's got to be something like fighting in a garden kind of, man. That's wild, man. So tell me a little bit about that. Hold on one second. Dev, I'm going to let you fire off a question real quick because I got something AB told me to ask you real quick. So Dev, I'll let you go first.
Oh, man.
I thought you already asked the question, man. Talk to us about fighting in the Barclays Center, man. You know, like Kyle said, it's not the garden, but it's kind of getting there, man. What was it like fighting in the Barclays?
Well, for the first time experience, for the road of the Golden Gloves, it was surreal. Going there for the weigh-in, seeing all the celebrities who actually support the New York Golden Gloves, meeting with legendary fighters, legendary radioists, people who just did interviews, and to actually come out and walk out to that ring, it was just surreal. Honestly, I had the jitters. I got there before everyone was there. I actually have a photo that one of my trainers took of me that I'm looking at the ring. The whole it's empty. The whole Barclays Center is empty, and I'm looking at the Titantron. It was surreal. And then to see the pictures that was taken, my face on the Titantron, me talking to my fans after I won, and I look back now, and I'm like, wow. It's kind of like a second home now because most of my fights are there.
Okay. So, all right. I got it all cooked up, and that's why I brought it up. So we're talking about you being from New York. So You got to tell me about the nickname, bro. First of all, how did you get Bank on it? And how did that turn into what we've got now with the Longshore Man? Come on, man. You got to let me in on it.
When I started boxing, I was also a banker. And I was in banking before Longshoreman. I was in banking for about 8 years. So my trainer would call me the boxing banker. I was like, it don't catch. And I believe, I think while training one day, I was actually sparring. And I got into a heating sparring match. You know, it becomes, you know, mano y mano, the testosterone's building, we're going at each other. And then I hit him, and I just said, bank on it. And then right there, I was like, wait, ooh. I was buzzing. It stood with me through the amateurs. And I just, even as I got into the Longshoreman, you know, I didn't want to be like, change this, I can't Longshoreman rope. It's just, you know, bank on it stands out. You know, the whole, you know, the money team itself, everything goes hand in hand. And like you look the shirt, you know. So
hey, man, you're rolling with it, bro. I ain't mad at you, dude.
That's right.
You agree with it, man. So tell us about that. So how does it feel now that you tell us a little bit about you signing with Mayweather Promotions? How'd that come about? How do you feel about it? Like, how do you feel this is going to advance your career?
It's been a great experience. It's been a great road trip. I've had the luxury of traveling to Vegas to fight in Vegas. I fought in Baltimore alongside Gervonta Davis. And this, you know, most of my fights have been in the Barclays Center. And, you know, it's been due to the fact of being with Mayweather Promotions. They've been able to keep me in these high ecstatic fights and events. And I'm truly grateful. But as far as being a part of it, it's been awesome, honestly. It's been great. And it's still surreal. You know, there's times that when Mayweather, he's come to the Barclays fights, you know, he's a busy guy. You know, he's business. He's a busy man. And I'm in New York. I'm not in Vegas. I don't have the luxury of being in Vegas every day. But I make my due here. And when we get to those fights and he's there, it's nothing but love, nothing but praise and encouragement. And you, with stuff like that, you got to praise and you got to show respect to. He's not one of those guys that just walks past you or, you know, he shows his love. He shows appreciation and he acknowledges, you know, as a fighter.
So that brings a good question in and of itself. So like when you do get to meet up with Floyd and, you know, you guys are at the fights, you know, you said it's all love. Like, did you feel like off rip it was something like this dude genuinely like gives a shit about helping me to be better as a fighter? Or did you think it was, did it have like kind of that business feel, you know, because sometimes it could just be like, you know, it's just money. But like with all the knowledge that guy's got, is it a situation where you feel like, yo, this dude like genuinely wants to see me not only, you know, do well for his, you know, his business, but, you know, be better as a fighter, you know?
I think it comes down to the vibe. And, you know, he's genuine. When we both talked, it was a both genuine vibe. And it was more of keep working. Don't, you know, the last thing you want to worry about the money. The money's there.
Right.
Just keep working, keep grinding, keep, you know, ranking up those W's. And then once you get to the top, it's there. You know, the glory's there. Just don't worry about that right now. Stay focused.
Hey, I can respect that. Dev?
Well, right now, the world's kind of in a weird place right now.
That's right.
So, first, have you had a fight under Mayweather Promotions yet? If so, any idea when, any talk about when that might happen?
Well, most of my fights have been, practically all my fights have been with Mayweather Promotions, but it's been almost a year, I would say. The last time I fought on the Mayweather Promotions was in the Gervonta Davis Nunez card when he fought in Baltimore. Yeah. He fought in Baltimore, Maryland. I fought on that card. And I actually fought with a stomach virus. It was it was actually crazy at that time I fought. But since I was supposed to fight in January, and I had fallen ill, I had gotten sick, and I couldn't compete. It was sad. And then after that, everything happened. The whole corona, everything had happened. And just from there, it's like boxing went, you know, it went out the back door for now. I mean, things are hopefully, you know, turning into shape. And right now, all we can do is stay ready. It's, you know, it's our profession as professional fighters. So no matter what, I have no exact date, but I know, you know, once everything opens back up, fights are going to be, you know, okay, we got to fight here, we got to fight there, we got to fight there. And you want to be ready. You don't want to say, okay, I got to get in shape first.
Right. Right. So go ahead.
Yeah, that's kind of what I wanted to get to is in this time, like, you don't know when you're going to have a fight. You're going to have to stay healthy. And once things open up, let's just say things open up in September. I see a lot of big fights that's going to be happening in that time. I know we got heavyweight fights. That's, everybody wants to make all kinds of heavyweight fights right now. So for you, what type of card would you like to be on? Would you want to be on a heavyweight fight? Would you want to be on a fight with some of the smaller guys like a Triple G, Canelo again, if they happen to go at it again? For you, what's the best kind of card for you to be on coming up in the business?
That's a great question. Honestly, I would love to be on I had the luxury of fighting on the Deontay Wilder Brazil card, and that place was ecstatic. That place was phenomenal. Actually, the image behind me was in the Barclays Center. It was on the Dominic Brazil on the card and Wilder, and I actually sat front row seats when he put him out to sleep, and the crowd was phenomenal. Just everyone was going crazy. Wilder just, you know, he keeps everybody on their feet. So I don't know who the next heavyweight fight is going to be, you know, Tyson Fury and Wilder again. I know that, you know, Tyson Fury would love to take that again after what happened. And you still make a good pay out of it. But honestly, the heavyweights, I love heavyweights, man. You never know what could happen. It takes one punch.
So like you said, man, you fought on like you fought in the biggest places that you can be, you know, fighting like Barclays and all that kind of stuff. So with the recent fights that we've seen over in UFC, first of all, do you watch MMA at all? And secondly, with now that we've seen the fights the UFC's been putting out and they're talking about this fight island, how long do you think it's going to be before boxing starts trying to put on fights with no fans?
Well, I know the Zone, the Matchroom Boxing. He's doing the owner. He's doing, I think, an arena outside of a house. It's called Fight Camp, I believe, or something like that. It's supposed to start soon, but it's going to be a big arena, like outside. And he's trying to put something together. And I think everyone's going to start getting creative after Dana White. Dana White threw out the whole island thing. So I think a lot of people, the promoters, like Top Rank, the big names, are like, if he can do it, why can't we come up with something?
Right.
So the whole no audience thing, I honestly, it's a bit crazy because I remember fighting one. I fought twice on a Deontay Wilder card. I fought on the Deontay Wilder Ortiz, the first one.
Okay.
And
okay.
I was a swing bout. Basically, they fit you in whenever TV production time can get you in. You know, if there's all knockouts or whatever the case, sure. If there's all knockouts, they'll throw you in so it can match the time with production
like a
time.
Filler fight.
Exactly. There were no knockouts. So I wind up fighting last. There was three swing bouts. I was the last swing bout. So I fought exactly at 2 in the morning.
Damn. Wow.
I fought that at 2 wild. In the morning. There was no one in the crowd. It was completely empty. There was only the judges. And it was the weirdest feeling. So I can only imagine how it's going to be because, you know, audiences, it gets us pumped.
That's what I was going to say. So, like, what does that do for, like, and that leads into a question that I had that I wanted to ask you about. So one thing that we've talked a lot about on the show, so Devin wasn't around when I was still boxing, but he did get to come the last time I competed in jiu-jitsu, right?
Okay.
So, like, I was talking to him about it, and I tried to explain to him, like, boxing and combat sports, the mindset that goes into that. I don't really know how to explain it to people who haven't done it because it's weird. It's like anyone who tells you that they're not nervous or a little bit, you know, thinking about that shit, A, that's a lie. B, the adrenaline that's going. So for you, like fighting in places like Barclays to fighting there when there's not people. Can you talk a little bit to, like, what's going through your mind, what's going through your body when you're making that walk to the ring, and explain it for those who maybe have never, you know, made that walk?
It's crazy because you're going through a lot of mixed feelings as far as when you're in the locker room. You're basically, you're nervous, but you got to get ready. You know, you got to clear your mind. You got to put yourself in that basically not killer mentality. That's where you kind of want to go in there, because you see that, you know, he's coming for you. He's not coming to play. So you got to think of basically everything. And as far as, you know, all the months and the hard work you put in to be put in to the ring within a couple minutes, because, you know, that's basically what it is, you know, within, you know, 30 minutes, all that hard work you put in is done. So as far as walking out, honestly, it's a little bit of nerves, but more of a surreal feeling. You know, you hit your fans, you hear the music that you picked out, that you know is going to get you pumped up. And you look, the first thing I do is when I get into that ring, I look for my family.
Man, you can't not, dude. My mom always used to say that when I would fight. She's like, why do you always look at me when you fight? I was like, I don't try to. It just.
It's okay. Yeah, you want to make sure your people are there, because you know his people are there. So you're
right. You know, like, it's kind of like you got to make sure somebody's got your back when you're getting ready to go bang.
Exactly.
It's like the old schoolyard shit. Like, all right, I got somebody on both sides. We're good. All right.
Exactly.
Hey man, I totally could feel that. But before I get to our next question, man, we talked a little bit about this guy's nickname and why it's bank. On it, there's another thing you can bank on. If you need a house, check out the homies of Stransky and Company Realty, because you can bank on grade A service over here. Stransky and Company is a top producing real estate team that specializes in individual strategy, over the top service, and continued success for their clients. They're the real estate easy button. If you're looking to buy, sell, or invest, call them at 248-563-9449 or email them at admin@stranskyandcompany.com. All the links to that can be found on our website at kl3cpod.com. Check that shit out. Now, speaking of which, where you can find all the great interviews that we've got over there, a little birdie told me that you might have, you know, you might have been a wrestling fan at one point. Let's dive into that a little bit about that, man.
Oh, I used to love wrestling. You know, I grew up with the Undertaker, you know, Mankind. Everything, I think I would say before John Cena came in, I was a little around the John Cena era. But everything before that, the Mark Henry, the Dudley Boys, Tajiri, you know, the people of that platform, Shawn Michaels, NWO, just, you know, the Generation X. I think when wrestling, they kind of transitioned more to a comedy platform. Back in the early 2000s, it was more as in, you know, rated R. They would do anything.
I agree, man. And that's why, like, they're trying to put so much hype behind AEW. And before I go anywhere, man, shout out to AB, who's over here in the live feed. I see you over here, man. Yeah, dude, it's like, that's the hard part. And, like, that's something that we talk a lot about on the show. Like, things aren't, you know, really, you know, what the same. You know, you mentioned The Undertaker being, you know, one of your favorites. Have you seen that they just put out that docuseries that they got on him?
I haven't.
It's called The Last Ride, man. This is the first time he's ever let anybody go back. It starts in 2017 and it rolls right through to 2020. So it shows, like, all through the match, like him backstage training for it, the whole kind of like The Last Dance, but a WWE version pretty much.
Oh, that's awesome. And he's a GOAT. He's the legend.
Hey man, that guy is something else, man. So who, you know, you mentioned Undertaker was your favorite. Are there any moments that stick out from the Attitude Era that, you know, the Attitude Era or anything in particular for wrestling? Do you got any, like, top moments or anything of that nature or favorite matches?
I would have to say when he threw Mankind off the top. I saw that I had one of those little hot boxes. I had one of those little cold boxes. I had a cold box.
No, you had cable that you paid for every month.
Every month, yeah.
Don't worry, Vinnie Mac, we're giving you your cut, bro.
I'm not.
But But yeah, you know, stuff like that, the Royal Rumbles, Undertaker versus Mankind, or the Triple H when he first came back, I think he had a neck injury of some sort, and he did a surprise, and dude was jacked. He came out.
The one at the Garden, right?
I believe so. He came in with a jacket and everything, just jacked.
Yeah, that was 02. That was when he returned in 02.
Yeah. You know, times like that, you know, you got to really recognize the that's a classic, you know, the classic battles. Stone Cold with The Rock, you know, all the time. Mr. Socko, you know, the crazy things.
All those are in the background right behind you, man. They got Socko up there, and he signed it as Mankind, Cactus Jack, awesome. And Dude Love. And then you got Austin right below him.
You know what's so funny? I was so oblivious. I would be like, Dude Love, he looks like Mankind. Mankind looks like this guy. How is Kane and Undertaker brothers?
Dude, in the worst
That was the best part about wrestling, because you were so into it that
and you didn't. Really, but it was because the internet wasn't around and you didn't know that shit. Exactly. And the Undertaker, like, that's one of the big things they were talking about on that Last Ride thing, man. Is that, like, he was like, "Look, man, I came up in an era where you didn't tell nobody nothing." He was like, exactly. "Nobody knew the difference. You didn't see me out here doing all this other stuff." And it's like, now everybody knows everything. Like, back then, man. That shit was like, but it's funny though. You meet some of these guys, right? Like, I met Mick Foley, no bell for Devin, so fuck you. So there's this thing on the show. Whenever I say I'm there or I've fought or anything of the sort, he likes to ring that stupid bell. But since we're not in the studio, he don't got a bell to ring. but yeah, dude, when you meet some of these guys, man, you meet them and you're like, eh. Mick Foley, dude, was everything you could have ever thought he'd be. Like, this dude was like super chill. But man, can you see how bad it beat him up, man? Like, you watch, you watch him walk, man, and you're just like, dog. Like, it's wild.
That guy took a beating, you know. Those professional WWE back when it was a WWF, and before then, these guys would do acrobatic things, try to do backflips, land on their neck, and it's like, it's crazy, you know. You could appreciate the entertainment they try to bring fans.
Yep. So, little known fact, Dev, you wanted to know how I know AB. Well, he just commented in the comments. That was the day we met. We met at WrestleCon in New York, like right after I met Foley, and he was over there trying to get Kevin Nash on his deal.
Oh, yeah. Gustavo, he be always at the wrestling, you know, all the
signs. That's where we met when I came down there for New York for Mania.
Okay, awesome.
He wants me to come down there, some little project stuff when we come down there. Maybe I'll have to get some work in with you in the gym one of these days.
That's right. Yo, he's probably going to mention it, because he mentions to everybody that I dropped him with a body shot, AB.
Dude, oh my God. Like, we talk about this all the time, right? I was talking about it, but I didn't want to put it out there. Yeah, I'm going to be coming to New York. We're going to be bringing you some cool stuff. Enzo, formerly known Enzo Amore in WWE. You'll be seeing him on the show real soon once all this quarantine bullshit's over with.
Awesome.
dude, that brings me to a perfect point. The worst punch I ever took in my entire life, man. We was in it was a smoker show. You know, when we're fighting in the amateurs, we was all outside, man. Dude hit me in the liver. And ooh. I was like, damn, like, you know, it's that delayed reaction. I thought I was good. And I started to walk forward, start to walk him down. I'm like, oh.
Why'd you take that hop step?
I'm like, oh, shit, I can't breathe. Let me take a knee real quick. I hurried up, took a knee. I'm like, hold on. Time out. Like, you ain't putting me out like that, dog, because I can't even breathe. Dude, those body shots, bro. But let's get back to serious business. So we talked a little bit about WWE. We talked about, you know, you liking pro wrestling, you know. Let's take a page out of pro wrestling's book. So when quarantine's over, are there anybody that you're looking forward to fighting, or any matchups that, you know, interest you, or, you know, stick out to you?
As far as names, honestly, there's no one in particular. Just line them up. You know, I've been hungry. I've been hungry for the past year. You know, things happen. But honestly, I'm at a point where I want to, you know, make all the fights possible. Or any type of fights that's out there that they can make happen that could set me up for contentions to, you know, keep moving forward and, you know, rack up these state titles, these big belts, and just, you know, move forward in my career. You know, I don't want to just stay stagnant and just keep training and keep training. Right now I'm training, so hopefully by, like you said, September or around there, things could start coming back to normal and I could be ready.
Hey, I totally respect that. So, like, that's another thing. Like, for you, you know, with all this with Corona, I mean, obviously things are different for everybody. Nobody's being able to train the way they want to or anything of that sort. You know, like, how has that impacted your training? And, like, what does training look like for you right now? Are you still in the gym all the time right now? Are you doing a lot of body weight stuff? Are you doing road work? Like, how are you staying consistent with your training right now, being that we're not in the most of ideal situations?
Well, I feel like for the most part, the lockdown is should be no different other than sparring to professional fighters or fighters in general. Because, you know, when we're in top performance of training, we're basically on lockdown ourselves. We keep away. We focus on the fight at hand. So this is honestly nothing new to me. But I would have to say it would be the sparring. The sparring or the joint runs or the group workouts. That's been a little different. But good thing, I love to run. That's been the most thing that my father instilled in me. You know, running is important. Running is number one. And I kind of made that first priority when it came to training as far as everything else. So I stay on top of my cardio. And as far as training wise, the boxing gym, my trainer opens up the gym for me. We work, you know, we keep the gym open to ourselves and make sure I get the workout in. We do the 6 feet distance. We take precautions, and he knows that no matter what, everybody's working still, you know, everybody's still training. As far as you got to have, all you need is a heavy bag. All you need is a speed bag. And even if it's a small ring, make everything do. There's people in different countries who have less that they come in shape.
I mean, I feel like in 2020, man, everybody just assumes that these gyms are going to be like these big, like world-class, like, you know, super gyms and stuff, man. And it's like, I can tell just from like the way you're describing your training and the way I came up. I mean, the gym I train in now when I'm able to train, you know, is a nicer gym. But I mean, the gym I started in was a little tiny joint down in Detroit, man. Mm-hmm. And I remember that first fight where I took that liver shot, dude. It was, you know, we fought outside across the street in the middle of summer, set the ring up in the parking lot. Anybody could walk up, and it was right next to a gay strip club.
You're telling me you let a guy hit you in the liver shot outside. You gotta find him. You gotta get a rematch.
Hey, dude, I'm right, bro. I know. And the worst of it was, like, dude, the worst of it was that was the first fight I ever fought, right? First of all.
I hear you.
Second of all, dude was older than me. Thirdly, they were like, bro, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. And I'm like,
oh, yeah, that's why when you hear that, it's not fine.
No, it's not. And dude was whooping my ass until I finally figured out, like I said, that I hit hard, bro. And it was just like, oh shit. Yeah. Like, all right. Uh-huh. But yeah, dude, like it was kind of one of those deals, man, like where we would go and we would fight places where it was like just small little fucking, you know, you would go here and spar with these people and go there and spar with these people and, you know, all that kind of stuff, man. So like my question for you is, so we got see guys in MMA, like I said, we cover MMA here, you know, like Donald Cerrone, who are fighting 6-7 times a year. For you, like, mm-hmm. What's the sweet spot for you in fighting in a year? And, like, what are your thoughts on guys like that that are fighting, like, 6-7 times a year?
I mean, it depends on the point of your career, honestly. I feel like, you know, people who are world champions like Canelo, you see him, he fights twice maybe a year.
Yep.
2 to 3 times a year. I believe it's, you know, in the standpoint of your career, if you're still trying to build your record or feel like you need to do more, of course, you want to stay, you know, on the warpath where you want to stay busy. Like for me, for example, at least with everything going on, I'm hoping to at least get 1 to 2 fights, but it's probably going to be about one fight for the year. And then next year for 2021, I want to flip the switch and at least do six fights and, you know, get the train rolling because, you know, fighters are losing out on the whole year.
Okay. Dev, I know you're over there. You had a couple lined up. So what you got, man?
Well, one thing that I've always wondered, I've never been really the biggest boxing guy. Like, I watch boxing, but I don't understand everything about it. So for someone who doesn't know a lot about boxing, can you explain the golden glove system? Because you hear people...
Ooh, I like this one.
Yeah, I hear about the golden glove all the time, but how is it set up? Is it like a regional tournament? Is it a national thing?
There's both of those.
Golden glove.
Yeah, well, there is national. National is typically when you win the novice and the open Golden Gloves, and they send you to the national tournaments. But as far as what you're asking, the Golden Gloves is basically they have a novice, which you have under 10 fights, and then they have an open, which is basically 11 to
however many.
However, you could have 300, 400. So basically, it'll be from everyone of New York. There's people who try to do, you know, come from Jersey and try to enter the tournament or even from different countries. But typically, it's all of New York sign up for specific weight classes and they compete for basically, you know, whatever I have around my neck. It's called the New York Golden Gloves, and it's you know, Muhammad Ali, the big names have won it, from Staten Island, Marcus Brown, Anthony Caramano, Rashad Mati. There's a couple of Golden Glovers in Staten Island and all over New York, of course. But it's one of the biggest tournaments that's recognized all over. It's not just New York, but New York kind of stands out because we had the legends that fought in New York, Mark Breland. A lot of the legends have, you know, that have won the Golden Gloves came from New York. So that's why I feel like New York more stands out from that standpoint. But the Golden Gloves is all over.
So, Dev, this is one thing that I wanted to – I thought I was waiting for him to point it out. But another thing that goes along with that for those that don't know, like, can you speak a little bit to what it's like, you know, when you're fighting in those tournaments? Because I was going to fight in the Detroit Golden Gloves here. Mm-hmm. And I know at least when I've went, like, I went when guys in your stable were still fighting, like Jay Leon Love and stuff like that were still fighting mm-hmm. here, you know? And, like, you, Dev, sometimes you got to fight, like, 2-3 times in a day, man. And, like, you could be waiting, like, a long time in between fights. So, like, that waiting game and, like, having to fight multiple times in a thing, man, that's what's so crazy with, like, the Olympics and stuff. So what are your thoughts on that kind of deal as opposed to now where you know, like, okay, I got an 8-10-week camp, you know, whatever mm-hmm. it is, and I know I got this guy. Like, what are the differences for you with that?
I could say from that standpoint, I honestly do not miss it because it was a same-day weigh-in, you know, considering the difference with professional. You got that whole day to eat up, yep. you know, put on the right portion weight. It would be the same day weigh-in, but as far as the tournament itself, it was a little bit of nerves because honestly, there was a system. They used to mail you the envelope to say, okay, you're fighting this day. You used to get a letter in the mail stating when you're fighting, but now it's online and they never had my weight class. I kept checking. And I was already signed up. I went into the sauna. I came out and they had put it out of nowhere. And it was that same day that I was in the sauna. It was 2 days. It was that same day I was in the sauna. And the following day, I freaked out. I called my trainer. I called the owner of my gym, everyone. I was like, what's going on? I thought I had flunked out because I didn't make the fight. But thank God it was the next day that I fought. So I got matched up for the next day. And I was basically fighting every week. I fought a total of five times. Some people get the luxury of fighting 1 to 2 times, depending on the weight and who enters. But I fought 5 times. I fought at least once every week. And I liked it. I liked the discipline of knowing that, okay, I can't do this. If I do this, this is going to happen. I got to do this or I got to eat right. If I eat right, this is going to happen. So it's a matter of discipline. And it kind of teaches you how to transition yourself from an amateur to a pro. So going into the pros, I was kind of ready.
I mean, Golden Gloves will do that for you. But now that you talk about you being in the pros, you know, you're with Mayweather Promotions. You know, you talk about fighting on some of the Wilder cards. Mm-hmm. You being a pro, what are your thoughts on the rumors of Deontay coming to mess with Floyd after the last loss to Fury? What are your thoughts on that? And what'd you think of that fight?
Honestly, it's tough. Wilder's a phenomenal fighter. He's crafty. You don't see normal heavyweights move like that. It's unheard of. I've yet to see a heavyweight move the way he does, the fluidity in his legs, his punches and bunches, and have pop to it. He's basically the full package. And Deontay Wilder, I feel, was kind of exposed because he has that devastating right hand. And all he needs is to land that right hand one time. And we've seen that with the Luis Ortiz, the second fight.
Right.
So I feel like it's honestly too late in his career to try to basically learn how to box. You know, that's where you're going to Floyd to basically learn how to box.
Pretty much.
Don't get me wrong, Floyd is the best to ever do it. He's the GOAT, TBE, but I feel like it's a little too late in his career to go that path. You know, he could maybe look at his tape, figure out his mistakes, but I feel like a third fight is not going to make a difference, quite honestly. I feel like Tyson Fury is in a league of his own when it comes to all the heavyweights. I don't see nobody beating him.
What do you think about, would you be from New York? Go ahead.
Not even Joshua?
I feel like Anthony Joshua was kind of exposed when he fought Ruiz the first fight. Given he probably slept on Ruiz, right? But Joshua's been hurt almost every fight from his last five fights. His chin is very questionable. And I feel like he wasn't able to get Andy Ruiz, who was out of shape, maybe an extra 60, 70 pounds, a lot heavier. He couldn't really move. He couldn't get him out. It went a full 12 rounds.
Yeah, I didn't understand what Ruiz was doing in that second fight, because I was hearing that he was talking about he wanted to come in heavier. I think either if that was the case, I think that was a bad.
Yeah, he
was a bad move, or he just didn't train properly to get in such a shape for that fight. I just thought it was
weird. I feel like at that point of his career, it was history that was made. You know, he changed the face of boxing with that amazing upset, one of the biggest upsets. You know, so I feel like with all the money, the fame, the media, everyone that was on top of him, he took advantage of it and he enjoyed it a little bit too much.
So basically he shocked the world. He was like, all right, I'll get this one last payday. I guess I'm good.
Exactly. And, I kind of figured, look at Deontay Wilder, the Deontay Wilder fight. It was a close fight, so they made a second one happen.
Right.
So now they're possibly gonna make a third one happen. I don't see Andy Ruiz if he's gonna get that chance again, because there's so many fights that they can make now. I don't think he's gonna see Joshua. That's a fight you gotta avoid. If I'm Joshua, I'm avoiding that fight.
Well, it doesn't really make sense for Joshua to take that fight at this point, exactly. Because I mean, with the way he won the last one, it wasn't like it was something like the first one where he had every reason in the world to want to fight him again. For him, if he beats him again, it's like, okay, so you beat the guy. You know, with Wilder, it's going to be real interesting, because my thought with what you were saying with that, with Floyd, I think Floyd could help him a bunch with his boxing, but here's the other thing that people don't take into effect, those that haven't fought. So Wilder's whole career, he's kind of been a brawler of sorts where, he's just trying to hit you with that one shot to knock your block off. And then he finishes you out once he hits you. If he is to go in there and train with Floyd and start, boxing, that could fuck up his whole style too, because it's so different. It could take him longer than he expects. Like if he tries to jump back into the ring too quick after trying to change that up and doesn't make sure he's good first, and he goes in there and say he fights completely different than what helped him with Tyson Fury the first time, that could be, I don't know, that could be a nasty thing in and of itself too.
It's sort of like when Ronda Rousey, when you win all your fights a certain way and then that's not working anymore, it's like, what do? Do you completely become a whole different person, or do you keep trying the way you been doing it your whole career? So I see what you're saying.
Yeah, it's tough. Honestly, I feel like it's tough. For instance, Ronda Rousey, when she took that first L, she tried to make a comeback, tried to change a couple things and try to come back, and that didn't happen. And it's like, okay. You've been putting on so many W's into your career, all these wins. It's like, where do you go from here? How do you capitalize? Or are you supposed to change everything at this point in your career when, you're kind of winding down? Deontay Wilder's what, 40, about 41, 42 wins?
Yep.
How many more fights he got left in him? Now you're going to make a change up and do all this and change everything.
Hey, man, them are some big boys to be taking that kind of damage, man. Not that it's any worse with any better with a smaller guy, but damn, those are some big dudes throwing them shots at you.
Deontay Wilder punches crazy.
So you talk about late in your career. What are your thoughts on the talk of Iron Mike coming back, man?
Oh, man.
I don't know, man. That man's left hook still looks nasty as shit, and I'm not to take it.
The last thing to go on a fighter is his power. And I feel like Mike Tyson, he'll never lose it. He'll never lose that agility. It's just something that isn't, he's a legend. He's legendary. There's nothing, no one that could ever be like him. And I don't know. I like to see him where he's at. He's peaceful. He's enjoying life. He's happy. He's he got his podcast going. He's talking about his past. And I can only say it's the itch of a fighter, you know. A fighter always has that itch. Was like, all right, one more time. Let me just grab these gloves one more time. One more time. Wait, you can see, like, you know, Bernard Hopkins, 40, he was like, what, 46?
That was hard to watch.
Exactly. You know, fighter Roy Jones. There's these
fighters. Another one.
exactly. And it's, you know what it is? It's the itch of a fighter. You have, that's why, you know, these us fighters, we come from a different breed where we want to just keep going and keep, no, I still got it left in me. I want to keep going. If you see most fighters, they say, I want to go out of my shield, is because this is what we love. This is what we do. So it's like, it's hard to just say, okay, no more, or that's enough.
All right.
Hey, so did you get a chance to listen to that conversation that Mike Tyson had with Sugar Ray?
No, I didn't get a chance to.
Well, he said something very, very interesting in that conversation. He got really, really emotional. Basically, he was saying it was this conversation, the conversation he had with Joe Rogan. Basically, he was saying, like, he's afraid of that guy that he was before. He said sometimes he doesn't like to train because he feels that guy, that monster coming out. And like, when I started seeing these videos of him training again and getting back into shape, I got terrified for whoever he gets in the ring with.
That guy was a monster.
Look, so, I'm calling it right now. It's going to be him and Holyfield in a four-round boxing match.
But, yeah, that's what I was getting to. I think it's going to be him and Holyfield in, like, an exhibition. But I'm hearing people talking about, oh, I think Mike Tyson could actually, you know, go up against some of these heavyweights now, 53 years old. Do you believe that? Or do you just say, all right, put him in an exhibition with Holyfield, you know, something for charity or something like that?
Yeah, I honestly think it should be nothing but that, nothing but charity as far as, you know, him getting back in the ring for, of course, health concerns and for the sport of boxing. No one wants to see that, you know, him getting hurt or, you know, God forbid anything happens. And that looks bad on boxing itself. You don't see guys in MMA, I mean, at least to my knowledge, that 50, how old is he? In his 50s, 60s?
Yeah.
I'm out of retirement.
I mean, Randy Couture did it at 40, but 40 and 50s are different.
Those are big different numbers right there. And the amount of fights he's been in, I feel like a four-round exhibition will be perfect. I mean, I've heard rumors of bare knuckle fights and stuff
hell
with Dan and Briggs. I don't know if that's true.
I heard that. I heard that, and we've had a few guys on the show from Bare Knuckle FC, so we'll see if that ever comes to fruition. Hell, they just threw Chuck and Tito together again, man, so who the hell knows? Oh, yes. So I do got one more question for you. So,
okay.
Oh, shit. Jeremy Ramos says, what about Tyson versus Ruiz?
Tyson, you know what's funny is that Ruiz, I would say, has the closest style to a Tyson.
I can see that comparison.
It's not like a close, but I would say a similarity, because if you look at all the heavyweights in today, he's the one that comes and punches and bunches and movement. The way he fought Joshua, the way he fought his past fights. If he could stay dedicated, I would say, honestly, he could be one of the best heavyweights around.
Hey, man, that's a good point. So I got a question I'm going to ask you that we usually ask all of our wrestling guests. But I figured out how to tweak it a little bit for you on fight night. You know, the question usually is to all of our wrestling guests, you know, what are your locker room pet peeves? We've gotten everything from, and mind you, we've had everybody from Booker T and all that. So we've had all.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah. So we've had everything from wash your balls, keep your baby mama out the locker room, bring your own wrist tape, bring your own squirt bottle. So for you, not only for yourself, do you have any pet peeves for fight day? And B, for a young fighter, like, do you have any pet peeves when it comes to that shit? Like stuff that annoys you, or like anything that you would say to a young guy, and anything that, you know, personally is a pet peeve for you on fight night?
As far as fight night, yeah, I would say I try to keep everything the same. You know, I would go to the same diner after weigh-in. Okay. The next morning, I would go to the same breakfast place, the same lunch place. He'd try to eat the same food and become superstitious about everything. you know, as any fighter. I think I did it during the Golden Gloves as well. But the locker room is pretty much calm. I try to keep it just me and my trainer. I try to keep it, you know, subtle and humbled. I don't bring a crowd with me. I don't like any of that. I put on my own mix of music from rock. I even have, like, there's people that follow that have to follow you in the Barclays Center, basically watch your every movement. And he was like, your music's weird.
All right, what'd you have playing?
I think I had a little bit of rock, a little bit of Metallica.
Hey, there ain't nothing wrong with that. Put on some Enter Sandman, bro. You getting hyped up here.
I had it on, I had my my music on random, like on a random mix. So it was playing everything. He was like, okay, from that to Spanish to this to that. I try to listen to everything. I stay off my phone. If that's a pet peeve, I would stay off my phone. I don't like really anybody on their phones, you know, texting or I'm here or this is what we're doing. I kind of like everything off, just the music on, just a quiet demeanor and just stay focused. Everybody quiet. We'll talk a little bit here and there, but for the most part, I'm just focused. The music's going and it's just a little bit of quietness in the locker room.
So with you growing up in New York, man, we mentioned Enter Sandman. Did you watch ECW growing up, man?
It was, you know, what's funny is that it was kind of ECW versus WWF at that time.
Yeah.
But I was definitely on the WWF bandwagon, but all the fighters from ECW with, what's his name? Paul Heyman.
Yep.
Paul Heyman grabbed everybody. He grabbed everybody from Taz. I love Taz. When he came, I think he came in with Kurt Angle. I think he surprised Kurt Angle.
Yep. His first match was against Angle at the Rumble in 2000 in the Garden.
Yeah, he showed up out of nowhere and then put him in his Taz submission, I think, or something like that.
Yep, Taz mission, yep.
Yeah, I remember that. Who else came with Taz?
Deadly Boys.
Deadly Boys came in.
Yeah, a couple of high flyers. Who was the high flyers?
Rob Van Dam.
Well, yeah.
Rob Van Dam.
Jerry Lynn and Sabu, too.
Sabu, yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. I had to see if you watched ECW, man. What'd you say?
You ever been to a wrestling match in the Garden?
I've been there one time as a kid, and it was, I believe I was probably like 7-8 years old, and it was just live. It was long. It was long. Like the whole event itself. I don't know about the taping, how they did everything, because I was so little, but it was a long day and a long night. But it was phenomenal. The crowd was crazy.
Yeah, all right. You always hear about the mystique of the Garden in WWF, man. That's why I had to ask, find out if you ever been to an event there.
All right, so you being a New York kid, man, I got to ask you about it because, ding, ding, Devin, I did get to go to the Garden and I went to Barclays twice while I was in New York. So why the fuck is everything so expensive in them places, bro? Holy shit. Like, Devin, you've never been to Barclays, right?
No.
Oh, my God. Like, dude, their concessions in Barclays got to be, like, the most expensive concessions I've ever, like, seen in any arena I've ever been to in my life.
Yeah, you can't carry singles in there. You better use your credit card or something.
Dog, you're easily talking about like next to like 40, 50 bucks to get you like a pop easy. And a burger and some fucking fries.
Uh-huh. Easy. The garden's a little cheaper. I've been there.
Garden's a little bit cheaper, but Barclays is wild, bro.
Yeah, it's wild. Uh-huh.
When I fought,
they used to have like a buffet in the back. So I'm usually like slipping and sliding. I'm like, all right, I'm hungry after a fight. And I just go and grab all the food with all the reporters and everything. Cause the food is way too expensive.
Dude, even your McDonald's there is more expensive than
everything around that area. Holy shit.
Dude, the day after WrestleMania, I'm sitting there and I'm like, all right, well, there's a McDonald's right down the street. Let me just go hit this McDonald's right quick. Cause we were staying like right outside Times Square, right?
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, let me just go get some food real quick. I go in, I got something that cost me like $5 here in Michigan. They're talking about like nine. I'm like, for what? Like,
there's no dollar menu here. Don't think about a dollar menu here.
Dude, even the dollar menu don't even rock like that, dude. I can get away with like $5.25 here in Michigan in New York. They're like, I want $10, bro.
Oh, my God. Yeah. You'll eat, spend $20 and still be hungry.
Well, Ken, we're getting towards the end of the interview here real quick. Before we let you go and have you throw out your social medias out real quick, before we let you go, in quick fashion, if you had one dream fight, whoever the hell you want,
any time period, anything, anywhere too. And I'll do the same for wrestling. If you was ever to wrestle, who would it be against and where? And if you could pick any fight against anybody from any time period and where would it be?
All right. As far as boxing wise, I would say only because he's my favorite fighter and he's my idol. So I can only just being in the ring with him would be astonishing. Would be awesome. Would be Miguel Cotto.
Ooh, I like that one.
Miguel Cotto in his prime, furious, just an animal in the ring. I would love it. And the crowd he used to bring, I've been to his fights. Usually used to fight like the weekend of the Puerto Rican Day Parade. And it would be packed crazy. And it was just a phenomenal crowd. So I would have to say I would like to share the ring with him. And as far as wrestling, oh man, there's so many characters. But I would say it would have to be probably Kane. Kane used to freak me out.
So that's who you want to fight? The big son bitch that's going to try to light you on fire?
That guy was... Between him and like I said, between him and the Undertaker, the way they would lay down for like 5 seconds, you're eagerly waiting for him to get back up.
I feel like that would be the last person I would want to fight.
if you're gonna go with size, then I guess Rey Mysterio.
Hey, bro, I'm just saying, if I'm doing that, I'm using my finishing move, Dev. You know what it is? I'm gonna kick him in the dick. It works on everybody. Drop kick him in the dick. However, it's gotta happen. And it's going down like that. But man, we appreciate your time, man. And when I make it out there to New York, man, maybe we had to get down on something in the gym a little bit.
Oh yeah, of course, man. It'll be an honor.
Hey man, likewise, bro. Hey, throw out your social media, let everybody know where they can find you. And man, anything else you gotta plug?
All right. As far as Facebook is Ken Robles, Instagram and Twitter will be Ken Bank on it. Robles, you can follow me there. I'm usually posting up workouts, the family, my training regimens, and a little bit of daily motivation to keep everybody going, especially during these tough times.
Hey, man, we appreciate it. Dev, why don't you throw out your social media again real quick before we get out of here?
You can find me on Twitter at Devin63. That's DevinThe63. You can find me on Instagram at AllSteakNoSizzle. And once again, make sure you join the Reality Era News Group. Probably going to talk about Double or Nothing coming up this weekend, too. With Mike Tyson handing up the championship belt.
Great segue, Dev. Great segue. So we're going to get into that. Make sure you're checking out the channel. If you're watching this on YouTube, make sure you hit that subscribe button because we're going to be giving you our Double or Nothing predictions. And the belt will be on the line because I gave Dev a shot at the belt for UFC 249. But I came away with that W. Both him and Corey were not getting there. And I got the belt over here sitting on the wall. Everybody saw it. If you ain't watched the video, check it out on YouTube. But the belt will be on the line this week. We're going to give you our picks for AEW Double or Nothing. You've got Cody Rhodes going for the TNT title. You've got the Stadium Stampede match, all kinds of crazy shit going down with AEW. So, make sure you're on the lookout for your predictions. Let us know who you think. And if you enjoyed this interview, comment in the comments. Let us know. Check out all our social medias. They'll be in the description. And until next time, peace.
Peace.